gangbangers and stealthy Mexican bandits who snuck into the country to steal what little that immigrants like Angel and Perla had. They beat people and stole their watches and were reabsorbed by Tijuana before anybody noticed. The kids all walked down to Oscar's drive-in and pooled their pennies to buy a chocolate malt and share it. Snickers, Indio, Lalo, and Lil Mouse. She was funny. No front teeth back then. Indio mocked her, calling her Mouse. She chewed the paper straws with her gums and wrecked them, and the boys smacked her on the head. Later, Snickers came through for her, getting Minnie to school in Pops's old station wagon. Braulio liked to drive her. He knew he could stab any culero who stepped up to her in a disrespectful way. Everybody was afraid of him, except his family. It felt good for Minnie. No matter where she went in her school, she got respect because they all believed Braulio would come and set them on fire if they talked shit to the cutie. Everybody said he had done that very thing to some Mexican outlaw on Otay Mesa. Minnie didn't believe those stories, not at first. In those days, when Big Angel worked two jobs, sometimes three, poor Perla suffered in that dim apartment. She wanted only to return to Mexico. She did not understand his obsession with the U.S. This was not a better life. At home, at least, there was community, laughter, even hope. In Tijuana, if you wanted a party, you could build a bonfire in the middle of the street. Here, she found loneliness. And worse hunger than in Mexico. Worse because all around her, people were rolling like pigs in huge piles of food and clothes and liquor and nice underwear and cigarettes and money and chocolate and fruit. And she struggled to find new ways to stretch a thin chicken and a handful of rice to feed three growing boys and her man. Minnie, she could go hungry like Perla. It wouldn't do to be a fat Mexican girl anyway. Snickers and Joker rescued her days. They were wild, hilarious. Joker flirted with her most inappropriately when she was feeling fat and sagging and old. He'd get up behind her and whisper growl in her ear. Tía, me tienes tan caliente. She laughed and smacked him. But she also felt the hot tickles when he was against her. Oh no, bad boy. Though she might have pushed back on him once or twice with her bottom. The boys charged into that place as if it were some palace, blasted the TV too loud, lounged on the couches and shouted compliments. They always had cigarettes for her, then chocolates, then money, which she'd hide from Angel. When Braulio turned 16 and had gas money, he dragged her out to the car and drove her around. She couldn't understand where they kept getting so many cigarettes. Indio was different. He was always stoic, iron-faced and strict with the little ones. He was always furious with Big Angel for some reason. He never understood his stepfather's indulgence of the young ones, because Big Angel had been so hard on him. Big Angel tried to be Don Antonio at first. What else did he know? And he had used the belt on Indio's back. Indio was already as tall as he was, and the second time Big Angel thought a whipping was in order, Indio punched him in the face. I am your father, Angel shouted. You sleep with my mother, old man. I don't have a father. When Angel grabbed his arm, Indio spit in his face. When Big Angel rented the house in Lomas Doradas, it was a surprise for Perla. He told her he needed to go for a drive to pick something up from his boss. He was working day shifts pushing a broom, and night shifts he learned to sell real estate, one of his million jobs. She didn't like to leave the apartment, but he cajoled until she agreed to ride with him. The kids were inside the house waiting for them. When she realized what was happening, she collapsed. The boys had to drag her to a chair and hold her up. Ay Dios, flaco, ay Dios! It didn't take long for Indio to spend more time away. with friends. Then Gloriosa and Joker moved in with them, and Lalo began to learn what Snickers and Joker were really like. First they had tattoos, then they had money, then they hid guns in the bedroom. They liked to catch him and stuff him into the cabinet under the sink and stick a broom handle through the door poles to leave him trapped. They filled socks with glue and breathed the vapors. All the boys were skinny, except for Indio. He was born with that body, but he never missed a chance to build strength. He had arms that anyone would kill for. He did 200 sit-ups a day, push-ups when he came for weekend visits, with Minnie kneeling on his back. The house started to feel impossible. There were so many bodies crammed in there they could barely breathe. There didn't seem to be any air. They had no idea how busy the little house would always be. When Big Angel came home from his jobs, he sat on the slumpy couch with Lalo and Braulio. Minnie sat on the floor between his bare feet, rubbing Quinsana powder between his toes. Gloriosa sat in the used easy chair. The only place left was in the corner on the floor with the dog that Snickers had rescued in the rail yards. So Indio sat there and just stared at the TV, never looking at Big Angel. Joker tended to hang in the back room reading comic books. Perla stood in the kitchen, leaning against a counter, drinking instant coffee, fretting and smoking. They all smoked, except Minnie, but she would learn fast. Big Angel grew dark, brooding as he worked extra hours. He worked now in a bakery up in National City, so he was able to bring home stale donuts. The kids thought donuts made them rich. Snickers and Joker had never tasted jelly donuts before. As soon as he had changed his bakery uniform, Angel was out the door to clean business buildings in downtown San Diego. He came home and studied to sell term life insurance, and then came night classes in computer programming. He crawled into bed after midnight to the sound of his wife and daughter snoring, then was up again before 6 a.m. to make more donuts. But he bought the house for $18,000 through the real estate brokers he used to work for. And that's when Grandpa Antonio moved in, thrown out of his own house by Little Angel's mother, Betty. Big Angel never thought he would end up making peace with his father, and certainly never thought he would give him shelter. But once Gramps was installed, Indio never came back. Perla and Minnie had to meet him at the pancake house when they wanted to see him. His hair. He had an earring. One day, Perla took his hands in hers across the table and said, "My son, are you a queer?" He and Minnie stared at each other and fell over laughing. Angel and Don Antonio spent many tense hours at the kitchen table, elaborately ignoring each other and sipping black coffee. In Don Antonio's view, coffee with cream and sugar was dessert, not a drink for men. Angel felt superior at last to his father. He knew the old man had been thrown out for sleeping with American women in his wife's bed. "I loved your mother," Don Antonio said, though whenever America came over, he hid in the back room. "Why did you leave us then?" "I don't know." Another cigarette lit, Perla keeping out of it, fearing the old man, fearing he'd come for her one night, and she would be afraid to fight him off because she didn't want her flaco to suffer any more heartbreak. She kept Minnie out of his reach. "Son, the more I learn, the less I know." "Oh? I thought getting old made you wise. You only find out how pendejo you are. But when I get too pendejo to drive, put me in my grave." "Padre, it isn't that bad." "Well, mijo, I can still get upstairs to a lady's apartment, but my pecker won't stand up to do anything about it." "I see," Angel replied. But he would not really see until he was dying. And he'd replay this chat in his bed when he couldn't sleep. "I am just learning how stupid I am." easing back into his body. She snored beside him, flung across the mattress as if she were running downhill, arms and legs akimbo. He patted her rump. He liked the edge of the sheet over his lips, all tucked in, tight, safe. Early morning before dawn was best, when he didn't remember he was dying. For a moment he thought he had a future, and he savored his past. Today, it tasted of butterscotch. Part 3. Celebration Day. The morning of the party. 8 a.m. It was time to get ready. Little Angel lay on the couch, watching morning light creep across Marilu's living room. Everything smelled of sweet, powdery perfume. The Sibs all thought Little Angel was cheating the system somehow. A culture thief. A fake Mexican. More gringo than anything. He knew that. He had heard his sister call him a gringo Mex, as if being any kind of Mexican had scored him points in the grand game. As if being any kind of Mexican in California was a ride in the Rose Parade. But what was he going to say? Tell them all the times he had been called taco bender, or wet back, burrito breath? They would laugh at him. Should he make lists of the Mexican girls he had dated when he was a kid? Show them poems he'd written in Spanish? Spanish. His family didn't even like speaking Spanish to him. He tried, and they insisted on answering him in English, though they knew perfectly well that he spoke Spanish as well as they did, and better than their children did. Each side had something to prove, and none of them knew what it was. They didn't like his ease with that world of fancy, pale bastards up north. They thought he had it made, growing up with English and Spanish together, and he didn't have an accent in either one. And he was probably rich. Everything had come so easily to him. Anything he wanted, including their father. They imagined his Christmas mornings as orgies of bright toys and radios and bicycles. They had seen his class lectures on YouTube, talking about Chicano authors they'd never heard of. They knew he mocked their accents. They found him disrespectful of their father. Well, perhaps calling him the sperm donor in his fatherhood and Latino literature course was ill-advised. He owned that. He believed he was celebrating them when he shared stories of their foibles. He felt the burden of being their living witness. Somehow the silliest details of their days were, to him, sacred. And he believed that if only the dominant culture could see these small moments, they would see their own human lives reflected in the other. Unbeknownst to him, across town, Big Angel had again re-entered his body after visiting their father's grave in Tijuana and a visit to the family home in La Paz, fallen now and full of tumbleweeds, and a voyeuristic moment in La Gloriosa's bedroom to watch her dream. La Gloriosa was up early. She didn't know why everybody thought she was late to everything, cabrones. She was usually up before almost everybody else. It took time to be this fine. You didn't just jump out of bed looking like the living legend of the family. I know. So maybe she didn't get where she was supposed to go when they wanted her there, but she made sure they would remember forever the moment she arrived. Even though she slept alone, she always wore beautiful things to bed. This morning she was in a red teddy with black lace trim, all silk and soft, so tender that she loved to run her hands over her own ribs. Her hair was a mess, and she liked it messy, but she had taken off her face last night, like she did every night, and she didn't like the look of herself without her makeup and eyes put back in place. They looked puffy and small without her attentions. Her skin was splotchy in the morning light, and her lips vanished every night. It took two levels of lipstick to bring out their ravishing power. The delicious center of her kiss and the suggestive darker edges. Men should feel like they were going to topple into her mouth. el lipistiki. She knew that her own beauty was aided, yet not diminished, by artifice. The Mona Lisa was in a beautiful frame, que no? The true nature of her face was enhanced when she allowed the artifice to focus the viewer's eyes, and her beauty would show them the pure gold inside her. A touch of copper on the eyelids and some precise eyeliner craft really worked their magic on her eyes. The nearly invisible blue line above the black, and that eyelash thickener, that was her real secret weapon. Aside from her general wonderfulness, it was hard some days to get started. It would be fun to just tie a scarf over her hair, put on sunglasses, and run free along the seashore. Buenota, she told herself, for she found herself very good. It was her job to tell herself. She stretched. Her biceps were beautiful. But that floppy back-of-the-arm stuff made her crazy. All righty, she said in Ingles, though she rolled the R. Righty. Before her makeup session, of course, her long shower. Sorry about the drought, but the shower had to be long and hot. Leg razor, French shampoo, L'Occitane conditioning cream, clear bar of peach almond soap, bottle of milky face cleanser. No soap on the face. Exfoliant and moisture scrub. She wasn't going to look old like those other family girls. She may be aging, but she was going to make sure everyone remembered she was the youngest of the sisters. When she was a kid, they called cute girls mangoes. She was still juicy. Who wouldn't love fresh mango on their tongue? After the shower, she planned to deploy her ointments. La Gloriosa never went into the day without lotion on every inch of her body, and gentle secret potions sunk into her face and neck before the makeup. Touches of the darkest perfume in her secret spots. Her top beauty secret? Preparation H. Under her chin and eyes at bedtime. One sacrificed for perfection. The young girls were going in for waxing, they told her. Waxing? They were crazy. La Mini, for example, went to the Pretty Kitty Salon in Chula Vista. The Pretty Kitty? Was that what she thought it was? There was a limit. Even though Minnie had given her a $10 discount certificate, there was no way some Filipina was going to pour wax all over her kitty. Eso sí que no, she said out loud. She let the hot water run down her back. Everything hurt. Nobody told her this when she was growing up, that you get rusty and aches appear in the unlikeliest places. Her hips hurt. Her head hurt. She breathed in the steam. The headaches frightened her, and the pain behind her left chichi, among her ribs. She was so afraid of these small aches that she didn't mention them to anyone and barely admitted them even to herself, even to God. She ignored a small flicker of a thought about little Angel, lifting her breasts from behind, easing the pain out of her ribs. No. She ran her hand over the scar of her son's birth across her lower belly. She felt self-conscious at the thought of anyone ever seeing her naked because of it. Her poor son, her only son. She wept in the comfort of the hot water. Guillermo. Ay, Guillermito. Strangers had shot him 5 times. Why? It had been 10 years now, and every morning she still whispered to him, cried for him, always her baby boy, never mind how old he was. Why? They had shot him and left him on the sidewalk. And he might have survived. That's how strong he was. He might have survived, but the shooter came back and shot him in his beautiful face. Why? Why? He and Braulio died in the same swamp of blood, black in the streetlights, Braulio staring into the street, and Guillermo without eyes or a face. People took pictures on their phones, videos, the boy's fingers almost touching. La Gloriosa covered her face with her hands and knelt as if in prayer, letting the sobs come. 8:30 a.m. Little Angel was surprised when he got out of the shower that Maria Luisa had gone out for a couple of goat cups of good coffee. She'd brought scones, too. He came out with a towel around his waist and gave her a hug. "Ooh," she said, delighted. "You go to hell for flirting with your sister." He sat. It was a long-standing joke with them. When he first met her at 10, it was at the beach south of Tijuana. Don Antonio had packed him in the car in San Diego and driven him south, across the border and down the coast. He had this beach he loved, Medio Camino, halfway down the highway between Tijuana and Ensenada. Little Angel had long believed they owned this beach, since Don Antonio always called it his. Roadrunners charged along the highway, and grim, dark cowboys often rode along the beach and took them for gallops at 10 or 20 pesos each. One day, Big Angel and some of the other siblings were there with their aunt. There was also this pale girl who was older and taller than he. She was resplendent in a black one-piece bathing suit with long white legs and black hair, and developed. Little Angel was becoming very aware of Chichis at 10. He was in love, until he found out the ghastly news that this siren was his big sister. Where had they kept her? What a dirty trick. The family had laughed at him for decades. She had watched as Don Antonio dragged him to the surf with Big Angel. Little Angel couldn't swim, and he was afraid of the waves. Antonio held his arms. His brother had his legs. They swung him and threw him into the waves. He cried, so they caught him when he washed up and did it again, and again. "Learn to swim, and this will end," his father told him. His brother laughed the whole time. So did Marilu, at first. But by the end of it, she had her hands clamped over her mouth. When he crawled out of the water and tried to run, they chased him down yet again. And again. Little Angel shook his head to clear the memory of that day and smiled. He ate. He drank. "Man, I love coffee." "Real coffee, maybe," she replied. She smirked. The whole family had inherited the bizarre belief system of Antonio and America. Instant coffee was some kind of miracle. Mexicans of that generation liked to stir a spoonful of coffee powder into a cup of hot water and tinkle it around with a spoon, as if something highly sophisticated and magical were happening. Nescafé. Café Combate. Then they poured carnation canned milk into it. They thought they were in some James Bond movie, living ahead of the cultural curve. Or maybe they were just sick of coffee pots and grounds. "I think I'll take real coffee to brother's birthday," he said. "I'll get a box at Starbucks." She ate a second scone. "To hell with the calories." "Are you going to put some clothes on?" she said. "Nah, I thought I'd go naked." She went into the kitchenette. "Don't let Paz see you," she said. He leaned into her breakfast counter and did a bunch of 45-degree elevation push-ups, feeling fatuous and Californian. "Paz," she continued, "that bruja." "Not this again." "We can't even look at each other," Marilu said. Little Angel nodded, backed off the counter, and sipped his coffee. "I know," he intoned like an empathetic talk show host. "Did you notice her refusing to come near me at the funeral?" she said. "No." "You see how she snubs me?" They all stayed away from Paz. Her code name was Pazuzu, the demon from The Exorcist. Add tequila, and her head would rotate, and someone would be assaulted. Vomit eruptions were not entirely out of the question. And, Maria Luisa added, she hates poor Leo. "Here we go again," Leo, the lion, the dude. Oh? Little Angel said mildly. Poor Leo. Mighty Lou's ex-husband. The fam kept him in the loop out of some nostalgia for better times that had never actually happened. Or for the opportunity to scissor him behind his back. Each was equally gratifying. Even after their divorce, Leo took Mighty Lou dancing, and he survived the family's most notorious New Year's Eve party. It had ended with a drunken Pazuzu slapping him repeatedly and shrieking, "Eres una mierda!" and Mighty Lou running to his rescue, bellowing, "He's not shit!" "What was that crap on New Year's Eve all about?" Little Angel said. "She said Leo exposed his organ to her in the kitchen." "Okay, mistake asking about that. You know which one I'm talking about, right?" "Stop," he said. "His organ." "Yes, not his pancreas." "Angel, I'm being serious. Leo has a very tiny penis." "Oh my God." She held up her thumb and forefinger about an inch apart. "Like that." "Stop it." "Like an acorn." "Stop." "He doesn't even like to show it to me. No way he's going to show it to that woman." Little Angel fell back in his chair and let out a groan of utter despair. 7 a.m. Minerva Esmeralda, la Minnie Mouse de la Cruz Castro, lay in bed, dreading the start of the day. It was all going to fall on her. She wanted it to be perfect. Daddy's last birthday. El Tigre was sprawled naked beside her, with the pillow over the top half of his face. He had some stripes tatted on his right shoulder, swooping down onto his chest and surrounding his nipple. She lifted the sheet and studied his sad little critter, all flopped over like it was drunk. "Hey, big man," she said. "You awake?" She poked him there with one purple fingernail. It moved. Well, big boy wasn't dead after all. "Tiger," he snuffled. She leaned up on her elbow and flicked his nipple with one of her nails until it stood up. "Dude," he said, "you gonna give me wood. You don't watch out." She bent to the nipple and circled it hotly with her tongue. "Whoa, girl." She bit it. "Hey." "Well," she said, "I'm right here." She suckled on him. "Nice titties, fat boy," she said. "Best be careful what you wish for," he said. "Boy, you gonna talk all day or do something about it?" "Girl," he said, "you're so fine. You know it. Watch out, here it comes." He rolled to her. Afterwards, she made coffee. Then she slipped out while he showered. She lived about 5 miles from Big Angel and Perla, and she was the one they called every time there was a medical crisis. She had spent countless nights sitting in emergency rooms and waiting rooms. She kept an overnight bag packed and sitting by the front door. She drove, singing as loud as she could to Katy Perry on the radio. Last minutes of peace, maybe forever. She had to be strong. How was she to know how strong God wanted her to be? If she had known beforehand, she would have checked out. Now she was in the middle of it. Inside, she was still that girl who had run away at 14. What was I thinking? I know every crazy thing anybody does seems like a good idea at the time. That's no excuse. I have a grandchild now. How did that happen? 7:50 a.m. Julio Cesar El Pato de la Cruz was at his ex-wife's condo, picking up his boy. Cesar was tall. Not like the cartoon Donald Duck at all. More like a hungover 6'3" goose with bags under his sad black eyes. He couldn't do anything about his voice, and he was a little hunched from trying to stop being taller than everybody else. His son was named Marco Antonio, continuing the theme of Roman emperors that Don Antonio had begun with Cesar. Marco was tall like he was, Pato's ex, Marcos's mother, was named Vero, and he still couldn't understand how he had cheated on her with Paz and ruined his life. He wanted to come back to Vero, but she would laugh in his face. He had been texting a lonely Filipina woman in Manila. She had as yet resisted his endless requests for a picture of her breasts. He didn't think about the first wife he had cheated on with Vero. He hoped there wouldn't be another wife. Four wives would be too much. Perhaps a nice Tijuana divorce, then a series of girlfriends. He thought he could still pass for 37. The hair dye on his eyebrows did not help. "Hi, Dad," said his boy. El Pato stared at him, this alien creature who had replaced his nice Mexican child. His kid was a singer, or he called himself a singer. Cesar had never heard anything like the, quote, music his son played. He had a faux Norwegian black metal band called Satanic Hispanic. They had a home recorded CD called Human Tacos Taste the Flesh. He wore a t-shirt that announced Killing Joke. When he sang, Marco barked guttural shrieks that sounded like the Cookie Monster possessed by Beelzebub, but unbelievably loud. So loud his father expected him to spit blood. It was the utmost evolution of being El Pato, he decided. His son roared, "Extreme!" at him in his finest hell voice. His hair was brushed straight up off his head in the fashion of Wayne Static from Static X. He didn't know the singer was dead. He had made tattoos on his arms and neck with a Sharpie. He was extremely happy. "Mijo," Cesar said mildly, "listo para la fiesta?" "Party at Pancake House! Breakfast, bitches!" "Okay, mijo, sure." "I hate God!" "Okay, mijo." "I am death! I take your last breath, motherfucker!" "Let's go eat panqueques." They got into the Hyundai. "Do you ever sing in Spanish?" Cesar asked, carefully pulling out and driving at his standard 40 miles an hour. "Spanish is for pussies!" Cesar forced a smile. He quacked a little dad chuckle just to show his son how tolerant he was. Not square. He had a fear of being square. Even when Little Angel was a kid and El Pato got to visit him for a weekend, he wore beetle boots and taught the kid to sing Help. He had things on his mind. Women. That was what was on his mind. Always. Who wouldn't think of women married to Paz? He thought about them so much, he often drove past his turnoffs on the freeway and found himself in strange parts of town as if just awakening from a trance. He wanted to know how some guys got women to give them their underwear, like Tom Jones. He shifted uncomfortably in his seat. He bet Satanic Hispanic got panties all the time. He glanced at Marco Antonio. He suddenly noticed his son had a ring in his nose, hanging off his septum like some bull.
"Did you always have that?"
"What?"
"In your nose."
The Satanic Hispanic threw up devil horns.
"I was born with it, Dad."
"Okay, mijo," he said.
"Ride the lightning!"
They pulled into the IHOP parking lot.
"No screaming, okay?"
"Okay, Dad." Cesar had once attended his baby brother's birthday party at Mission Bay. Little Angel had had cake and a bonfire and beer, and lots of American girls. The American girls had made his cake. How had he arranged that? Cesar was sure Little Angel also collected their underpants. Cesar had never seen so many American girls in his life. His little brother never knew that Cesar had lured his girlfriend away for a walk that night and received oral sex from her behind the slide in the playground. He was shocked and sad for his little brother that she said yum yum as she went in for the kill. He had steered Little Angel away from marrying her as often as he could. It was his duty as a loving big brother.
Ay, Marco, he sighed. Life is so strange.
Dad, you worry too much.
I do.
Waffles with a side of human!
Cesar got out of the car and walked the wrong way, and the Cookie Monster retrieved him and led him inside. 8:45 a.m. Little Angel came up the street carrying a cardboard coffee suitcase from the barista, a half gallon of good Colombian. The box had a white plastic spout with a twist-off cap. He had stolen about 20 Truvia packets to bring to the party. Minnie was sitting in the driveway on a lawn chair. She wore shades in the morning sun. She had skinny jeans and red sandals and a kind of peasant blouse that came off her shoulders and revealed her collarbones. There was a nice warmth in her belly. She grinned, took a puff from her Marlboro. Little Angel noticed that each toenail was a different color, and her fingernails were purple rainbows.
Hi, tío.
Nice toes.
Ah, I feel so special. Thanks for noticing.
She held out her hand for him to admire as well. She extended her cigarette to the side so he could bend down and hug her. He held the coffee box behind him.
Love you, tío.
Love you, girl.
Mucho, mucho.
Sí, sí, mucho. From his lair inside the garage, Lalo pressed his lips to the gap between the garage door and its frame and said,
Hey, tío, watch out for chud holes.
What? But Lalo was gone. Minnie said, Better not to ask.
That's our family in a nutshell. You got that right.
149 children and dogs ran between them and vanished into the yard. Still wish Indio was here, Minnie said, flicking some ash and looking down the street as if her brother might appear at any second.
You'd think, I mean, right, for this?
Yeah. She took a puff, blew it away from him. We got a disaster, tío, she said. What happened, he asked. And by the way, if only one disaster happens today, it'll be a miracle.
Yeah, right, she said, like that, a single two-syllable word.
Diphthong, the professor thought.
We forgot to get the birthday cake.
And then, is not the word diphthong actually a diphthong itself? From the cavern, Lalo's voice declaimed,
What a chud!
Eh, said Little Angel.
I'll chud you, pendejo,
she snapped over her shoulder. Little Angel patted his back pocket. I got plastic right here in my wallet. I can get it.
Really?
Sure, honey, let me handle it. I'd like that.
There's a Target across the freeway, she said, like a big yuppie Target.
Couple of miles across a bridge that way. They got a bakery. Make them write something fancy on it.
Okay. He made a muscle. Never fear. Tio's here.
You so cute, Tio, she said.
Shucks.
Honestly, I was running out of money. So you're my hero. She grinned. They got sushi even. She smiled up at him and he saw her through time and she was 10 years old.
Do you want sushi? He said.
Ay, tío, I'd feel selfish,
but you'd like some.
She nodded and smiled up at him over the rims of her shades. He said, Minnie, what you're doing today?
All this?
Be selfish.
I always knew I liked you, she said.
I'm your favorite.
And the handsomest, too.
Lalo hissed.
Sushi's for puppets.
Lalo, Little Angel called. What do you want from Target?
Captain Morgan, tío,
the lips announced, for reals.
Okie dokie.
Minnie shook her head, mouthed, no.
And get some red hot Takis, Holmes.
Right.
And ice cream.
Damn, Minnie said. You too fat already.
Look who's talking, Godzilla butt.
Hold up, she shouted. I'm coming in there as soon as I get up, and I'm gonna whip your culo.
Take you like an hour to get up, Lalo said. I ain't scared.
Little Angel went inside to deliver his coffee. Morning coffee with pan dulce. All my women. All around me. A good job. A garden full of chiles and tomatoes. Little Angel went back to see his brother, and there he was, still in his pajama pants, terrifyingly, ferociously awake.
Big Angel didn't speak, just beamed like some small lighthouse. He patted the bed beside himself again. Little Angel climbed on. Their little raft going down the big river. "Can you smell the cancer?" Big Angel asked.
No. Not really, Carnal.
I can smell it coming out of my bones.
Damn. I don't like it.
Yeah, no. I mean, I see how you wouldn't.
Big Angel settled himself and grimaced as he sank against his pillows.
It hurts.
Bad?
He looked at his little brother. What do you think?
Stupid question.
Hurts enough so I get the message.
For some reason, this made them grin at each other. Big Angel pulled out his bent and disfigured notebooks.
This, he said, is for Minnie and Lalon after I'm gone, see?
Little Angel nodded.
Got it?
Got it.
Don't forget.
I won't.
When I'm dead, get in here and pick them up. Don't let anybody else get them.
Jeez, Angel.
Don't give them to the kids right away. Wait a while. You can't forget.
I won't.
Crazy old man. What are they?
Big Angel hid them again.
Me, he said.
They listened to the sounds in the distance of the house and the yard. The way back bedroom already had kids of indistinct provenance crowded in the gloom playing video games. The doglets were barking, though sometimes they sounded like birds chirping. Bedla was ordering Lalo around.
How come, Big Angel said, we never kissed?
Kissed?
Don't families kiss?
Like brothers? Kissing?
Why not?
They pondered this ghastly new possibility.
Carnal, do you want to kiss?
Little Angel said.
Not really,
Big Angel said and shrugged. You know.
There you go,
Little Angel crowed, as if some appealing aperçu had been launched and had brought down the house.
You were just saying.
Sure, by golly.
They lay side by side, arms crossed, listening to the holy idiocy of the family banging around.
Lalo shouted, "Chud!" at somebody.
Big Angel asked,
"¿Qué es eso, carnal?"
"Lalo,"
one or both of them muttered. It was a cosmic explanation for everything.
Minnie shouted, "Get out of the flowers! Ma, the dogs are pooping in the flowers!"
The brothers nodded wisely. They were like a pair of magpies on a phone line, letting the morning warm them.
"Do gringos kiss?" Big Angel asked.
"Some," Little Angel said. "I know guys kiss their dads."
"Everybody kisses moms, though."
"Kissing moms doesn't count. It's required."
"Right, right. If you don't kiss your mom, forget it, man."
"Right? You don't get to heaven if you don't kiss your mom."
After a minute, Little Angel sensed his big brother staring at him. He turned his head. Big Angel was smiling at him.
"Actually, yes," he said.
"What?"
"Yeah," Big Angel nodded. "I would like it."
Little Angel rose up on one elbow and kissed his brother's burning forehead.
"Not so bad," Big Angel said.
"No, it was okay."
They had to change the subject.
"Big day," Little Angel said.
"My last day."
"Oh, come on."
"Angel,"
Big Angel said, grabbing his little brother's arm, "when you leave tonight, don't say goodbye."
"I won't."
"Never say goodbye to me."
"I won't."
Little Angel looked away.
"They forgot to get you a cake," he said.
Big Angel guffawed. "I have to go buy one now."
"Carnal," Big Angel said. "Get me two cakes."
"Why not?
What kind?"
"One white and one chocolate. Put my name on both."
"But don't get joke candles. I can't keep blowing out candles that light back up."
"I guess you don't have to watch your weight now," Little Angel said.
A moment of silence. Then Big Angel said, "Asshole." "A kiss from my brother."
Cesar el Pato and Marco the Satanic Hispanic pulled up as Little Angel was getting in his rental car for the Target expedition. Cesar jumped out of his little red ride and waved him down and climbed in.
"Wow," he said, "big car."
But in Spanish, "guau."
que carrote.
Mr. Death Metal dragged over a lawn chair and joined La Minnie in the driveway and immediately bummed a cigarette from her.
I love my family, Minnie said.
Whatever, he said. Little Angel fired up the big Detroit engine. Guau was right. It was no little Japanese four-cylinder. This was a locomotive.
¿A dónde vamos?
Cesar asked.
Buying the birthday cake.
Ah, qué bueno. Un cake.
They chuckled. They liked using folksy Spanglish. So amusing. Bikes were bikas. Wives were wifas. Trucks were trocas. And pickups were picas. Waffles were, of course, two-syllable words. Little Angel's beloved diphthongs,
waffles.
Don Antonio had hated Spanglish. They all got scolded, even as adults, if they said some bastardized border word. They didn't realize it was funny till after he was dead that he hated the word troca, because he believed the correct word was una troc.
Oh, Father. How are you, carnal?
Little Angel asked.
Sad.
Me too.
No me gusta.
No. El pato let escape one low, long quack of sorrow. He was nearly erased by all the tragedy falling upon him. His mama had still ironed his shirts until she was taken ill. Everything on earth was filled with sorrow. Little yellow weeds that broke through the tarmac made him feel weepy. The moon, like some pale paper cutout in the morning sky, overwhelmed him. They drove to Target together through the metallic drought light. All traces of yesterday's rain had burned away. Punk-ass little chicanitos with lowrider bikes and skateboards assembled on a dusty basketball court down by the McDonald's. The bridge over the 805 was as empty as a zombie movie, though the freeway below was clogged. It was too early for anybody to be out in the hood except those poor suckers going in to work and the skater vatos skipping church.
This all reminds me of when our father died, said Cesar, and made a face.
Little Angel loved that expression. Though it denoted distaste and displeasure, it was one of the great family faces. A squinchy little monkey expression. It had vestiges of Mama America in it, the old matriarch asserting herself in the faces of her children. All men had women inside them. They just could not admit it.
That was a bad time, Little Angel said.
Yes. But we knew it was coming.
Yes.
He was hard on himself.
Shit. He was hard on everybody, carnal.
El Pato shrugged one shoulder, moved his hands upward in a double flip gesture that denoted forever, and the far distance, and anyway, there's nothing you can do about it.
He kicked Grandma's dog down the steps.
Why?
Because.
They drove the mile to the bridge and across the 805. As they passed over the congested traffic, pigeons launched from the bridge and scattered over the roofs of the cars. They looked like doves for a second, diving off a pale cliff. All this gleaming Mississippi of Americans in their cars, rushing past the invisible barrio, unaware of the lives up here, the little houses, all these unknowable stories. But Little Angel reeled it back in and focused on his brother. He didn't take care of himself, he said.
Taking care was not what he did, carnal.
El Pato reached over and squeezed his knee. It seemed like the most beautiful gesture ever.
Were you sad, Angelito?
He asked. Of course, he was my dad.
I don't know how I felt, Pato said. Very sad, but a little glad? Is that bad?
No.
I mean my poor mama.
I understand.
Your poor mama.
Thank you.
He wasn't like other fathers. You know how Mexican fathers are. Want to be good? Want to be great?
He wobbled his head back and forth.
Some fathers.
You're like that.
El Pato quacked with pleasure. Gracias, carnalito.
They smiled, keeping it non-committal.
Hard. Hard. Pato ran a finger along his chin, making little sandpaper sounds on his stubble. A hard man. It was only 3 more miles to Target, but it felt like 10. Then, said Little Angel, he was sweet. All of a sudden, you'd come home and he'd have made a big supper. Pato pursed his lips.
Supper? Really? What did Father cook?
Spaghetti with hard-boiled eggs. They laughed. He put the eggs in there instead of meatballs. They parked, but Cesar wasn't ready to get out of the car.
Were you close to Papa? He asked Little Angel in Spanish. I mean, I know you were close, right? He lived with you.
Close? Little Angel didn't know what to say. Yes? No? Too close? Abandoned? What?
Sure, he said at last. ¿Sabes, carnal? After he left us and came to Tijuana, we followed him. Angel found us later, can you believe that? He came all the way in a bus and found us. We were living in the hills in Colonia Obrera. It was rough. The boys there used to beat me up. Angel hit them with a pipe.
Little Angel did not know this.
He and I had to go out and walk around Tijuana looking for food. Mama had nothing to feed us. Do you know how hot it was? Marilu cried all day long.
Little Angel suddenly felt guilty about his spaghetti.
We didn't steal, Pato said. Mama would never forgive us for stealing anything, but we looked for dandelions. Did you ever eat those?
Little Angel shook his head.
We filled our pockets and shirts with dandelions. You can't eat the puffs, but you can boil the plants and the flowers or fry them. If you have lard, sometimes Mama fried them.
Little Angel turned and stared at his brother.
So Angel came to Tijuana when I was a kid, maybe 12. He was already planning to marry Perla. He knew where our father, was, at our abuela's house. He went there every week.
I know.
She was the first one to move to Tijuana.
Yes.
She liked the Perry Como show.
They chuckled.
She had to live on the border, pues, just to watch it.
That and Lawrence Welk, Little Angel said.
Well, Angel told me. Father was at her house, and I ran all across town.
Cesar smiled sadly and stared out the windshield, shaking his head as if watching a distant drive-in screen showing a touching film.
I ran all the way to Grandmother's house. That was hard. It was up on that hill.
I know.
I had hard shoes. I got blisters, but I ran anyway. And I went in. I didn't knock, I just walked in. And there he was. He was sitting in that big chair in her living room, watching television, smoking.
Pell-mell.
He looked like a giant with clouds of smoke around his head. He never looked at me. I sat down and stared at him. I don't know what I thought would happen. Nothing happened. He had gray hair. He looked 100 years old watching a game show. And then he finally turned and looked at me.
Did he say anything?
Cesar blew a small chuff of laughter through his nostrils. He said, "Which one are you?"
Just like that.
"Which one are you?" So I told him. He said, "I thought you would be bigger."
Then he walked out of the room. Cesar opened his door and put one foot out of the car, but sat there.
Why was he like that? He asked.
I don't know.
Cesar shook his head. I didn't like that, he said, and got out and slammed the door.
9:45 a.m. Silence in the car as they returned to the house. The cakes they had pulled from the cooler would be decorated by 11. Pato had insisted on paying. The gathering vatos y rucas had adjourned to the backyard. Old people still outnumbered them since old Mexicans were up before the sun and had worked a half day before these gamers and Netflix kids opened their eyes. No Mexican Little Angel had seen in his life ever slept on a cactus, like all the taco shop signs insisted. La Gloriosa and Lupita were acting as Perla's sergeants, knocking heads and moving tables. Uncle Jimbo sat over by the geraniums, smoking a cigar. He wore a straw pork pie hat and shorts, out of which giant red legs emanated. Jimbo nodded, and they nodded back, and he puffed away and shook a glass of Diet Coke choked with ice cubes.
"Needs rum," he noted, "and a buttload of cherries."
He had a Confederate flag pin on his guayabera to let them know he was in no mood for raza bullshit. La Gloriosa was revealed in her full morning power, back-lit, hair outlined in silver, gleaming. Cesar flushed when he saw her. So did Little Angel. The sight of the two of them standing there like sad doggies begging for a snack irritated her, so she spun away from them and unfurled a plastic tablecloth with decisive, snapping down strokes, each muscled arm a rebuke of their inherent weakness. She thought, "Go to the gym, cabrones, you flabby little men." Little Angel hurried to his coffee box and delivered himself a dose of Colombian. Cesar vanished into the bathroom and could be heard locking the door. Little Angel lingered behind her, sniffing the air. "Don't be foolish," La Gloriosa said, but Little Angel didn't know if she was addressing him or the scraggly kid who had wandered in on his way to the back room for a round of Mario Kart. With rattles and bangs, Big Angel rolled down the hallway. He honked his bike horn.
"I want to go outside," he said.
"All hands on deck." They wrestled the chair out the sliding door and onto the patio.
"I smell coffee," Big Angel said.
Little Angel handed him his own cup.
"Instant?"
"No, fancy." Big Angel handed the cup back.
"Fuji," he said. "Get me some instant and put carnation in it."
The Chiweenies saw him, rushed to his chair and danced in wagging pirouettes.
"To my dogs," he announced, "I am a legend."
10:15 a.m. The Cookie Monster sidled up to Little Angel.
"Dio, you rock."
"Thanks."
"No, I'm asking. You rock?"
"Ah, yes, sure."
"Hard rock or chick rock?"
"Chick rock? Like freaking short-haired dudes. Alt-rock. Mormons." "I love this kid," Little Angel thought. "Oh, I see. Hard rock. Motorhead." The youngster nodded sagely. More brilliant convo. Little Angel was happy. What was an uncle for but this? Metal Tio, taking this hormonal squall seriously. "Well," he said, accessing his inner metal file, "God hates us all." He knew how to toss bait at adolescence.
"Right, Tio?
Rain in blood."
"Fucking hey," Theo the monster bellowed. "Slayer!"
They raised devil horns to the sun. 10:30 a.m., the worst time of the day. It was almost party time. Back in the bedroom, Perla and La Mini were struggling with Big Angel. They had pulled the chair backward against his will. Every inch made him more hysterical. He dragged his feet until the linoleum pulled off his slippers and then his socks. None of them could remember what pills he was supposed to take at what hour. They had to trust his computer of a brain to keep track of all his mega doses and his least favorites, the chemo lozenges. Minnie was certain he was hiding these under the bed, but she could never find them. They muscled him into the bathroom and stripped him.
"Aye!"
he said. He went limp in their hands and sagged, grunting.
"No."
They pulled off his diaper.
"No, you don't,"
he said. Minnie carefully wrapped the diaper in a tight ball and dropped it into the trash can.
"No, I said."
Big Angel was trying to sit on the floor.
"Leave me alone."
"Every damned day the same thing."
"Come on, Daddy,"
Minnie urged.
"Stop being a baby."
Perla ran the water. She was careful, kept her hand in the stream until she was sure it was perfect. Too cold and he'd curse, too hot and he'd cry.
"No bath today," he said.
They lifted him into the water. He kicked weakly.
"Flaco,
This is the one day you need to take a bath. Your party.
I don't want a party.
Be good, Flacon.
Too hot. It's too hot.
Dad.
Help, he shouted. Angel. Angel, come.
He threatened.